When you're talking to yourself and nobody's home, you can't fool yourself. You can't end this world alone.
So let me say this. It's not that action movies suck, but it's the action in action movies that is not very interesting. It's a lot of like shots of people firing guns, and there's nothing very visually compelling about that, or even sort of stimulating at all.
Yeah, okay. I get that.
And of old beat-up cars driving down alleys and stuff. So this is one of the problems that I had with the first Terminator movie. There's just lots of scenes of him driving down an alley, and this is supposed to be exciting, but it's just not... which is different from the second Terminator, right? Action movies in the 90s and since then, where it's a lot more fast-paced, you have a lot more sort of camera cuts and edits and stuff. And
so you're a fan of Michael Bay, then?
I'm and Jerry Bruckheimer. Like, when those two get together, it's magic.
I don't know, but Con Air, no Michael Bay, but, you know, you got something there.
Right, the Terminator movies.
Yeah, exactly. Content is king.
Well, sort of. It's also expensive, and...
Sure. Depending on the kind of content. I mean, you know, you put it in front of a green screen, and you can have people doing nothing to nothing all day, and it can look like something after the fact.
Right. Yeah. Although Terminator 2, you just watched it. It's amazing to me how dated the computer graphics look. I mean, it still works in the movie and everything, but... I remember when this came out, it was like a huge, huge fucking thing, and they spent millions and millions of dollars on like 3 seconds worth of computer animation, and it was amazing at the time, and it just looks very dated, what, 10 years, not 90, even 10 years later.
91, almost 20 years later.
Almost 20 years later.
Yeah, goodness. I mean, there's a lot to it. I mean, I don't remember the order. Did The Abyss come out before Terminator 2? Was that the first time they were doing that stuff?
Yeah, The Abyss was like his reward for doing so well in The Terminator, I think.
Okay.
Let me look it up. Are you on your laptop?
No. If I were, you'd be able to see me because they all have those built-in, cameras, so that way people can watch you masturbate. I guess that's big. I don't know. I always sort of look at it and think, what are you doing, camera?
Right. So, okay, so I have my little note sheet up. So, yeah, so the first thing I had here was about James Cameron. You guys talked about this a little bit, I guess, in your... And one of the comparisons that Zach made, that I also made in the notes, was about the transition from Terminator to Terminator 2 and the transition from Alien to Aliens, where Aliens is a much more sort of... it's an action movie, right? You have lots of gunfights and stuff.
Yeah.
And Alien 1 is a thriller, right? It's Sigourney Weaver trapped in a closet waiting for the alien to pass by, right? And
waiting for R. Kelly, exactly.
Right. and the first Terminator is also like that, right? The first Terminator, it's an 80s action movie just in the sense that there's lots of gunfights and car chases, but it's really a thriller in terms of the dynamic between the Terminator and them, right? Their main goal is just to run away from him as fast as they can, right? And get in the car and just go and
It's a lower budget film. I get what you're saying. It's tough. The whole idea, like calling the first Alien movie and the first Terminator movie, like sort of a suspense thriller, is like it's definitely a new kind of thing. It's a hybrid sci-fi action thriller because, like, you look at something like an Alfred Hitchcock movie, like Rear Window, and that's a thriller. And thrillers are usually very slow paced, and there's a lot more tension. It's a lot about what you don't see, but you infer. And in Terminator 1 and in the same the Alien, there's still explosions and fire, but like it's like they don't have the budget to do like what they do with Aliens or with Terminator 2.
I'm not entirely so for Alien. I mean, it's definitely an action. Both of them are action movies in a certain sense, but the first Alien movie also had this very typical horror film dynamic where you have a cast of characters and they get picked off one by one.
That's right? True.
And in the first Terminator movie, the goal is never to, trap the Terminator and destroy him. It's always to run away as fast as you can. Sometimes they just can't, and that's when they have to fight back. But
yes,
but it's like those nightmares that people have where there's a monster chasing them and they don't stop, right? So I guess later on in my notes I make the comparison to Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Frankenstein's monster, more accurately.
Yeah, right? Frankenstein's monster. I did that correctly once, and then I was like, fuck it.
Exactly. it's Nietzsche all the way, right?
Let's see. So let's go ahead and get into whether or not 80s action movies sucked.
Okay, well, no, I think there's one last little bit that we can do about the issue, because you got it right on the head when you called the first Alien film more of a horror movie, and I think that's really the key, because for me, like, as a kid, I can tell you that there were movies that scared me, and there were movies that excited me, but scared me also, and movies that excited me, but scared me also, were, like, Aliens.
Right.
Because there's, like, a sense of, like you said, there's, like, a proactive hunt. There's these Marines, like, taking a stand, and that's what's happening in Terminator 2, that's what's happening in Aliens. And in Alien and in Terminator 1, it's really much more a sort of people being attacked, people being... it's not so much in the first Terminator as clear that it's as it is in Alien, where, you know, the whole crew kind of gets picked off, like there are, you know, a bunch of teens hanging out in Camp Crystal Lake. But, I mean, if L.A. were Camp Crystal Lake in Terminator 1, it's pretty much the same thing. He goes around looking for Sarah Connor. He kills a bunch of other people before he gets to her.
Right.
And so...
I mean, you're...
That's the angle. And I think that the reason for that is because the idea of doing a science fiction movie that was anything more than just either straight up action or some kind of a, like, a, yammering pontification was a new thing in that time. I mean, Alien is 79, Star Wars was 77, and it was the big space opera, science fiction, Western combination. And really, you didn't start getting stuff like, I mean, Blade Runner was 82. You didn't start getting more, like, exploration into science fiction as, like, an action genre or even, like, you know, political commentary stuff. And it was mainly, it was still relegated, at least in the mainstream, to being sort of an offshoot of monster movie horror. And that's what you still have in those first two films. And that's what makes them more inclined to be grouped with suspense, thriller, horror, rather than action, adventure, drama, or whatever you'd want to call it. So there you go with that.
Would you say John Carpenter's The Thing is a horror movie?
Yes. I mean, it is. It's a monster movie, but it does. I mean, it's one of it's not an exception, but it's why it's elevated, why it's so beloved on the internet and everything, because it's got... the interesting characters. Everyone loves MacReady and his beard, as you can tell by Zach's blog, the Forgotten Movies or whatever, Forgotten Reviews.
Right.
I mean,
that's actually a good point. I hadn't thought about Terminator as being a monster movie, and I think a lot of that has to do with because of Arnold's role in Terminator 2 as the protagonist or one of the good guys.
Yeah.
Has so influenced what that character is that you don't really think of the Terminator as a movie monster in the way that you think of The Thing or Frankenstein or any of these other classic monsters. Yeah, that's a good point. And you're also definitely right that there's a difference between thriller and horror, and I'm not exactly sure how to articulate that difference, but...
Well, I think a lot of times... like with Hitchcock and stuff, when you're talking about thriller, a lot of the fear comes from within. And when you're talking about horror, a lot of it comes from without. It's something that's going to kill you and going to attack you. A lot of times for a thriller, it's like a paranoia about a person is gonna do something to you or something's gonna happen. I mean, that's why like Psycho is such an interesting film, because it plays like sort of a psychological thriller to a point, and then it kind of all of a sudden, you know, turns its hand, and you got this guy who is essentially a slasher. It turns into a slasher movie. You know, a guy stabs a woman to death in the shower and pushes a guy down the stairs, and he's just, you know, it's, oh, there's a psychopath running around killing people, and it becomes a different kind of, it kind of turns on its end there. So I mean this is all kind of moot and academic, because the idea of being able to classify movies into specific genres, I mean, it's been genre blending, I would say, for damn near 50 years, where you just don't know what the hell something. It's like, oh, it's a noir thriller,
Right.
It's moot. So, but yeah, I would say that the first two you know, both Terminator 1 and Alien are more horror in their thematic aspects, and Terminator 2 and Aliens are more straight up action. And I think action is maybe the easiest one, because it's the one where, like you said, you've got the good guy protagonist, you got the going up against, you know, the odds, going up against the aliens, going, you know, blasting away with guns and car right. chases and all that stuff.
Right. And if action movies are easier, then 80s action movies is the easiest fucking category to put anything in. So I'm going to stand by my claim that 80s action movies, especially gunfights, you can do a gunfight well. You can even do a gratuitous gunfight well, but most gunfights are just boring by their very nature. Watching a guy unload a high caliber rifle quickly is not visually interesting at all. I usually just sort of nod off during gunfight scenes. Like, and Commando was sort of like this, like the memorable parts of these movies. Not that these movies weren't good, they were certainly memorable, but the memorable parts of these movies are never sort of merely the action sequences. Gunfights bore me, car chases bore me. Especially the way that they did them in the '80s. So that's my claim. I'm throwing it up to Feudal Podcast because because where
you know,
else?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm actually kind of on board with you there. A lot of times I do find myself just kind of waiting for the obligatory gunfight to be over, because like you said, sometimes they can be shot in an interesting novel way. But for me, it's almost always about the interaction of the characters. In a more serious action drama, in something like Commando, a lot of it has to do with just the novelty of the interaction, the use of the music, the behavior, you know, the subtle behaviors of the character. Like, it's not even really much of a car chase, but the part in Commando where Arnold's in the Porsche chasing after Sully, it's all about sort of looking at Sully, like, with his, like, 80s idiot look, and then how Arnold ripped the, like, seat out of the car.
Right.
And it's those things that I find amusing. And then in something, I mean, you're right, the gun stuff is usually very boring because, like you said, the action to it is, there's not a lot to it. I mean, if you were writing that scene, you'd write gunfight, and it's like, wow, there's nothing really there. However, like, in Commando, I think the more memorable stuff for me isn't the part where he's all decked out machine gunning people all over the place, you know, destroying Carla's ex-husband's whole little situation. It's when he ends up in the garden shed.
Right.
And he makes that conscious decision to, you know, abandon his modern high-tech weaponry for the use of the more simple primitive tools, and he opts for he opts for saw blades and pickaxes and machetes, because that stuff is
gardening
crazy.
Gardening
shears and whatnot. Yeah. Because what you've got there is you've got that's more interesting writing even too. You know, it's like he grabs a guy's arm and chops it off with a machete, and you remember those kind of images.
Right.
Much more than you remember. I would say now, because everything is so inclined, and we can talk about this when we get into the Terminator movies, which I'm sure we'll eventually do, to go for that PG-13, no blood, no guts kind of thing. If you look at some of those, the thing about those 80s movies is that they weren't riding that line of trying to sell the toys and everything. I mean, maybe they still were, though, which is what I find so weird, and I think that they could get back to this.
Right. So a couple of things. One thing, you can do gunfights well. Example that I was thinking while you were talking was in Die Hard, when he has to shoot the glass. And then you have this whole him and his scenario, right? You have the whole environment involved, and you have to critical thinking and all this stuff. So you can do it in an interesting way. Another thing is that in the podcast you guys did on the fourth Terminator movie, you guys neglected to mention a movie fact about the second Terminator movie, which was that Arnold was very conscious about his contract that he wouldn't kill anybody. And in the movie, I mean, it's actually part of the plot, right? Where fucking the little kid's like, oh, you can't kill people, and so he goes around causing a bunch of casualties and doesn't actually kill anyone. The body count in it was also very low, and this was partly due to Schwarzenegger's insistence that the body count be low in the second Terminator movie. He didn't want it to just be a bloody a bloodbath movie.
That's true.
But here's
the thing that's interesting about that. It's the 80s, and even to a degree, and Terminator 2 is 91. But, I mean, like, I think everyone can agree that these kind of things, like the 80s, I mean, for music styles, for everything, they really kind of expand beyond and go within. I would say that 80s cinema, pretty much, for whatever you're talking about, when you're talking about 80s stuff, usually starts around 82 and ends around 92. And I think the same is for music styles, too. You still had disco and stuff in 80 and in 81, and right. So that's kind of, you know, so I can kind of cheat that a little. But the thing is, those scenes where he's walking around, and I just watched it, and it was on Blu-ray, so it looked all awesome, right? he's still shooting these guys in the legs and stuff, and you're still seeing, like, consequences of that. It's not like Good and the Bad and the Ugly, where they get shot in the leg and they fall over. They get shot in the leg, and they're like, ah, and they're squibs, and they're stuff. And a lot of it comes to other 80s movies, another Arnold movie, like Total Recall, all the or RoboCop, where you've got... old what's his name, the crazy Dutchman, I can't remember, blank on his name, starts with Paul Verhoeven, making it apparent that if someone gets shot with high powered guns or even just regular guns, you know, your body is made of flesh and chunks fly off and chunks shoot out and there is blood and there is guts, and that, like you said, is, even if it's just a regular gun fight, that is more interesting than what you get in like T4. Where the guy tries to climb over the fence and the thing turns the minigun on him and he just kind of slumps over.
Right.
I mean, that is the epitome of, like, the heart and soul of consequence, that's A-team style consequence-free violence. And I think we can all agree, and this will be my only little bit of moral interjection here, that you sell it to the kids like that, and that is really, really not doing anybody any favors to have the kids all think, oh yeah, you get shot up with a minigun, well maybe you just put a Band-Aid on it. It's like, no, you get cut in half. I mean, Predator 1. These are all 80s movies that I've been talking about where they show the real, honest-to-God, visceral consequences of people getting shot and stuff. So that's what I'm kind of arguing, that 80s action movies are less boring, than now. I mean, so... If you're gonna lay it out like you could always say that there are elements to certain kinds of more generic action movies that you find boring, and I would be completely in agreement with you there. But if you're saying I think this decade of this genre is more boring than another decade, then that's something where there's really like capacity for debate.
Well, I'm surely a product of more recent movies, I guess. I watch 80s movies. I mean. The kind of film that I'm used to is quick, jerky cuts and Fast and Furious 4 and shit. So,
Four Fast and Four Furious.
Four Fast, Four Furious.
That's right. Yeah.
which has gotten a lot more sophisticated with editing techniques and showing lots of information on screen in very short amounts of time. And and in the 80s, they just didn't have the sort of cinematic vocabulary to show an audience and have them follow. Schizophrenic film like that.
I think the argument they had the vocabulary, but I think the problem is that kind of vocabulary is comparable to something like Ebonics. I mean, that stuff all started, right. All that right. Fast cuts and everything started in the 90s or the early 80s with music videos. I mean, that's what any basic cinema person's going to tell you in an intro to cinema class is, look at these music videos with all the major fast cuts. Look at Citizen Kane with really long takes and slow bring up and everything. And now you got Michael Bay doing super duper fast cuts. You can't even see how these machines work. You can't catch up to anything. And it does drive a certain kind of, you know, reptile brain fight or flight in you that artificially puts you at the edge of your seat, much like, you know, the music cues have done for years in horror films. But I don't know if that's necessarily more sophisticated. Now, being able to convey a
no, you're right.
It's
a kind of slang that we're just used to now. When I go for long periods of time without watching TV, and then I turn on the TV and see a commercial, like most of the time I can't even process what's going on in a commercial because the language that it's using to talk to its audience is just, I'm just not part of that. I'm just not fluent in the
fluent idiot, huh?
Yeah.
No, I get you. You know, there's certainly a lot of hip speak that's going on with a lot of that, and I mean, I don't know, like, I'm not a huge fan of the old, like, Hong Kong action films and stuff. I mean, I've seen some of them, and I can appreciate them. But certainly you could say that for fights, not necessarily gunfights, but for honest-to-God, like, hand-to-hand fights, I would much prefer something like a Drunken Master Jackie Chan style. They do the time to do the choreography, and you actually watch the fight, than something like what seems to be so popular with the kids these days, these Bourne films where it's just constant shaky cam cuts and quick, where it's like Matt Damon didn't probably have to learn how to do much other than to kind of like swing his hands in front of his face.
Right, right.
I'd rather watch like, you know, a skilled fight in a movie. And say what you will about the wire foo and the bullet time and all that stuff that the Matrix kind of, people have been cribbing off the Matrix on. So that movie is over 10 years old.
Yeah. And it was incredibly influential. I mean,
oh, it was. But that film, like, you know, the kung fu scene with him and Bumpy Johnson when they're fighting is, for the most part, it lets you watch the fight. And right. that's what I want to be able to do with, at least with hand-to-hand fights. Now, with gunfights, you're right. You can do a lot of cool, quick cuts. And I think a lot of it has to do with environment. I think you really got to something there. That's why aspects of Terminator 2 are memorable versus 1, where it's less memorable, because, you know, there's stuff getting shot. He shoots the T-1000 when it's frozen and it shatters, and that's right. That's a good image.
Right. In the smelting plant, right?
Yeah, the smelting plant, of course. You got to have the plant where they smelt stuff. and so I totally am on board with you there, but, you know, I've got a list of films here, like, you know, like I said, we talked about Commando, we talked about Die Hard's a definite big one. The Mad Max films, I thought the Mad Max films, they are another case where, I mean, the first one is probably very slow and pretty low on action. The second one, I think, is also kind of slow.
I agree with almost everything you're saying about 80s movies. I have to disagree with your moralizing on behalf of the children.
you like the idea of consequence-free violence? You
think No. I think kids aren't fooled by consequence-free violence in movies. Do you remember when you were 10 years old, you got cuts and bruises and batters and scratches all the time?
Indeed.
You know that your body bleeds and is vulnerable. I mean...
Yeah. I think I probably do agree on that sense. I just think that it's bad for the culture, is what I guess it's like. because it's like,
Ian, you're like, so paternalistic.
I'm very paternalistic. I'm saying, you know, come on, people. We know if we're gonna talk about this kind of stuff, let's not mince words. This is a war with machines. This is human beings versus metal. Metal will cut you. Metal will smash you. Metal will hurt you bad. And the drama is higher when, you know, you're showing the proper consequences of these things, and it makes it less appealing or something. I don't know. It's just not, like I said, I think the least interesting gun battles from the 80s especially are in something like the A-Team, where it's all about consequence-free automatic weapon fire. It's all about little puffs of dust in the dirt, an hour and a half drive outside of LA, where they shot every single episode of the A-Team ever, it seems.
Sometimes they have to go back into LA so that they can drive through a chain link fence, but then they go right back out to the desert. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They drive through the chain link fence. Or they move the chain link fences out into the desert. Just inexplicable chain link fence out in the desert. But, I mean, yeah, that's basically, I think, the criticism of, you know, you do these hard R movies and then you do these kind of hard PG-13 movies, and certain, I mean, I don't know, say what you will, but the MPAA needs to get their act together and come up with a regimented rubric for what gets you a given rating, because there's a little bit of a fudge factor there.
I mean, the MPAA is just a stupid fucking institution. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm fine with the idea of, I mean, I think you need to have a rating system for things so that then you're covered. Then the parents shouldn't really be able to bitch, because you go, well, the movie is rated. There you go.
And yeah, but you have to disassociate it from the financial implications for the company that's making it, right? I mean, the problem is that the movie studios have to tailor their films in order to get something out of the MPAA, and the MPAA is completely aware of this, and there's all sorts of devious collusions and
the Illuminati, the Transformers. Yeah. and Robert Langdon will come in and be all judgmental about it.